Territory with Mike Fader.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
And this is Mike Fader, and it's Occupied Territory. We're here every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, podcasts are available usually later in the day or the next day. Also, I want to remind you, we have a guest today, but I want to remind you before we go on and talk to our guest that there's a parallel political discussion. Anything that you hear on this show or any kind of politics in general usually will be avidly pursued on our Facebook page, Occupied Territory and Facebook. Just Google those two things, Occupied Territory and Facebook. And it's all about income inequality, workers' rights, politics, foreign, domestic, whatever. So everything is on there. And just check in. You can do it anytime you want. You can post things you want or respond to some essay or some post that I made. You remember I told you, I think it was the last time or the time before that, Greg Palast, who is a great investigative journalist, had done a lot of investigating about Penny Pritzker. Penny Pritzker is, her family is very much involved with the Hyatt Hotels. Also, they owned a bank in Chicago. I'm not sure if they still own it, but the federal government considered that bank one of the worst predatory mortgage loaners in the country. And I think they shut it down or whatever they do, or they had to bail it all out. And also, she's been running the Hyatt Hotel chain. I think it's a family business originally. The Hyatt Hotel chain is famous for its notorious for its abuses of its workers and its abusive practices as far as employment practices. And we have somebody on today who is trying to do something about that. Kathy Youngblood is with us. She's a housekeeper at the Hyatt Andaz. Am I saying that right, Kathy?
Oh, hello, Mike.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me? I'm walking, so I'm in there's a lot of better traffic on Sunset, but I'm walking towards my hotel.
Okay. All right. So we'll get intermittent signals probably. But I just want to introduce you. You're a housekeeper at the Hyatt. How do you say that? Andaz?
Andaz. At the Hyatt Andaz.
Okay, and that's in West Hollywood.
In West Hollywood, California, on the Sunset Strip, right across from the House of Blues on Sunset Strip.
Okay.
Sunset Boulevard.
It says here that from what they told me that you were an auto worker for a long time, right?
Yeah, for 13 and a half years. And not only that, I've been in many industries, many different kinds of manufacturing industries. And so I've worked around, and I've also done private housekeeping off and on between jobs, and I've got quite a career. I'm 61 years old right now.
Oh, you sound like you're about 31. That's the energy, right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. So where did you do the auto working?
In Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
It was the old Fisher Guide plant, which is now closed, but I was there for 13 and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the best places I've ever worked, I have to say that.
So here you are at the Hyatt. You've been there for, what, 3 years or so?
Yes, I was hired in June of 2010 at the Hyatt Andaz as a housekeeper.
And let me get some details about what you do there. I mean, like, so you've been there a couple of years. And what is the nature of your day? I mean, what is the daily work you put in? Give me an example of what a day is like.
Okay, well, Mike, first of all, I'm no stranger to hard work, and I don't mind working hard at all, but I do mind being abused.
Mm-hmm.
When I got the job as a hotel housekeeper, it is one of the hardest jobs that I've ever had. You start in the morning, and you load a cart, a linen cart weighing over 120 pounds worth of linen. That's what you'll need throughout the day. So you push that all day over carpeted hallways and into a room. The problem is we don't have all the proper tools that we need, such as fitted sheets, long or short-handled tools. Sometimes we have to clean the bathrooms on our hands and knees. We use a toothbrush to clean the tile in the bathroom.
A toothbrush?
I thought that's... Some rooms are clean, some aren't.
That sounds like something out of one of those bad prison dramas. A toothbrush on the bathroom floor?
Yes, I myself do use a toothbrush on the bathroom tile.
So,
yes, we have chemicals, but if you've ever cleaned tile, you know that just spraying something on and waiting doesn't always get it super clean.
So you have to get these rooms completely clean and shipshape and everything like that. And anybody who's ever stayed in one of these hotel rooms, and almost every hotel has almost the same kind of beds these days, these mattresses are gigantic, especially king size or queen size. And they weigh a ton. If you tried to move it, you'd break your back, and you have to fit sheets underneath it. You don't have fitted form sheets, right?
Yes. We have asked for fitted sheets, but we use, presently, Hyatt will not let us have fitted sheets. Fitted sheets would be much easier, therefore eliminating the need to lift up the mattress so much. Now, we use king-size flat sheets on all the beds, no matter if it's a king-size bed, a queen-size, a roll-away, or a twin.
Now, why wouldn't they buy fitted sheets? And what was the problem with that? How much could it possibly cost them extra? Would it cost them extra?
Well, Hyatt has publicly stated at a hearing in 2012 that it costs them more money.
Really?
You know, to go to the laundry facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that they stated that they could not find an adequate supplier for kind of service.
Really?
That's on public record, too.
Well. So how many rooms? So cleaning even one room is a lot of work, obviously. But how many rooms? Is there a minimum they expect you to clean, or what? How does that work?
Well, I want your listeners to understand that each hotel operates differently.
Huh.
Now, at one time, they tried to make us clean 15 rooms, but we filed a petition with the Natural Labor Relations Board, and they issued a complaint, and there was a settlement saying that they can only make us do 13 rooms. But see, my hotel has large rooms, party rooms, and suites, so the suites are like small apartments.
Right, right. So, let's say in a hotel, so it's different. Like in a hotel where somebody just has, let's say, average size single rooms, the hotel management expects more rooms to be cleaned per person?
Well, yes. That was one of their ways that they could reduce, the expenses of a department is, and I think that was their initial reason that they tried to raise the room quota for us housekeepers at the Hotel Andaz, but we proved that we could not do that many rooms. But we're a unionized facility. At non-union facilities, the housekeepers have to do up to 30 rooms a day.
30?
So many times they miss their lunch and breaks. Yes, up to 30 rooms a day.
What union is it that you're in?
I'm in with Unite here. And it's Local 11 here in Los Angeles, California.
Is this a hotel workers union?
Yes, it is a hotel workers union, but it's a hospitality union, too. They also represent food workers, different types of workers.
Why would it be that your hotel is unionized and some hotels are unionized and some in the chain are not unionized? What explains that?
Well, here's the thing. You know you have a process that you have to go through, and the people themselves have to vote whether or not they want to be represented by a union.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this facility, my hotel, the Hotel Andaz, has been unionized, I think, for over 20 years. I think about that time.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what happens when people want a union. Say you're in a non-union hotel.
Right.
It may take 2, 3, 4, 5 years because the workers themselves have to come forward and eventually tell management they want a hotel. It's a process that's hard to explain.
But also probably there's people who are afraid to do it, as usual, right?
Oh, of course. That I would say the majority of workers that I've met in non-union facilities are very afraid for one reason or another mm-hmm. to speak out. Because, listen, everybody needs a job, but sometimes you have to make a choice. Well, do I protest? Do I raise my voice to management? Or do I keep my mouth shut, right. work through my lunch and breaks, and keep my job? And, you know, in these economic times, that's a difficult situation that each individual has to make.
Well, let me ask you this question. I noticed that I see a listing of the people on the board, or some of the people on the board at Hyatt. And one of them is Greg Penner, who is an heir to the Walmart fortune, which is obscene beyond words. These people, they get like $20 billion. They have $20 billion each or something. Now, at Walmart, and I've had workers on from Walmart and people who have been trying to form a union there, they might make $8, $9, $10 an hour if they've been there a couple of years and they're lucky. What's the pay at your place? And what's the standard kind of pay for a chamber? What is the work call and what is the title of what you do?
Okay. My title is room attendant. Now, at the Hyatt Ondas, I make $14.60 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other facilities, I don't know their exact pay scale, but I know at some Hyatt hotels across the country, they make minimum wage or slightly above. And,
what?
Of course, at the non-union, there's no benefits. There's insurance offered, but if you're making low wage, you can't afford to buy their insurance package each month.
And you have, is part of your package include health insurance?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have a very good health insurance package, which the union fought for years to put in place.
If you're there for a certain number of years or whatever, or some merit system, I mean, do you get raises from time to time? Is that a possibility?
Well, yeah, but the raises are contractual. You know, each time the contract is renewed mm-hmm. every 3 or 4 years, then that's decided, of course, by, the people that negotiate the contracts, the lawyers
mm-hmm.
and other union officials. So, yeah, we're supposed to get raises every few years. That's one of the great tenets of being in a unionized place is, you know, you're going to get something better.
That's good. Obviously, that's what's good about unions. There's plenty of stuff that's good about unions. Unfortunately, unions seem to be almost on the way out. There's a tremendous plunge in union membership, and the attitude towards unions is so hostile in this country now.
But you know why I think it's hostile? Okay, like I said earlier, I'm 61 years old. So I grew up in the era when unions were common, you know, particularly when sure. I was much younger. But I've seen the decline in unions over the years, and it's very alarming. But I tell you what, if we don't turn around and teach our citizens, especially our young people, the history and the why mm-hmm. it had to, mm-hmm. Unions were formed in the first place. And I have to say that as older Americans, there's not enough of us that are turning to the youth or the younger people than myself and teaching them the history, mm-hmm. the struggle, letting them know that some people died to form a union. A lot of people got fired. A lot of people got injured. I mean,
you know,
it's the history that we just don't, unfortunately, we just don't teach.
Well, they did.
So
I
think because of that, the feelings about, you know, the pro-union feelings have fallen to the wayside. I think it's just a sign of the times.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I know that when I was at school, when I was in high school, and that's, you know, I'm closer to your age than young people's age. And if you don't mind me saying that we're not young, that's okay with you, right?
No. I'm glad to be this old.
You are?
I've gotten better with age, and I'm still kicking, honey.
Okay. I'd like to say the same. Anyhow, so I know that they never taught us about unions in high school, and I'm absolutely sure, considering everything is computers and science and math and history is rarely taught at all, American history, and I'm sure they don't teach history of the union movement in high schools. I'm sure they would think that was some kind of socialist thing to do, you know.
Yeah, you would think, but I've known, and I attended a community college some years back, and And if somebody wanted to know today about the true history, the correct teaching of the history of labor unions, you'd almost have to enter a course, at least at the community college level, in labor studies.
That's true. That's true. So let me ask you this. Well, how much does it cost to stay in? A Hyatt Hotel is not low level. Hyatt Hotel is like middle to sort of slightly higher than middle level hotel to stay in, right, if you want to stay in a hotel?
Yeah, well, the different brands of Hyatt, of course, you can go to luxurious to just above basic.
Mm-hmm.
Hyatt is, I think, as far as I can note, at least our hotel cost a little bit more. At least I can't afford to stay there.
Yeah, well, I couldn't either. But, I mean, what was it called? What cost, like $200 a night or something like that?
I know that it's over $200. It's leaning more toward $300 a night. Now, I'm not sure of the exact amount it costs, but it's considered not the highest-end hotel, but
right.
It's considered up there because the Hyatt Andaz was the brand. The Andaz brand was started, I believe, in 2008
mm-hmm.
as a kind of sophisticated, chic, hip, different type of hotel.
Now, yeah, I know that from reading various estimates and investigative journalists that Penny Pritzker's fortune, or whatever you call it, is close to $2 billion. And I'm assuming, maybe you know, that Hyatt makes a profit every year, probably a lot of money, right?
Well, we do know right now, and I do know, now I can't quote the exact financial figures that they're mm-hmm. making, but Hyatt is doing extremely well.
Right.
Extremely well. They came out of the so-called recession really, really good. I mean, they're on the upswing, and they're doing good.
Now, and members of the board, let's see, I'm looking at it. Members of the board include Tom and Penny Pritzker of the billionaire Pritzker family, Hyatt's CEO, of course, Mark Hoplamazian.
Yeah, Hoplamazian.
Hoplamazian. Greg Penner, as I mentioned before, heir to the Walmart fortune. And then other board members have ties, it says here, ties to Goldman Sachs and private equity firms, right?
Yes, yes. And not one of them has ever worked in a hotel.
Well, I doubt it, yeah. I doubt it.
Doing physical labor, not one of them.
Well, which
so that's what the Someone Like Me campaign is.
Right.
We are calling on Hyatt to add that 13th member to the board, that 13th member being someone like me or one of my coworkers, a hotel worker.
Now, why on earth, let me be, you know, let's be realistic here. Why on earth would a major capitalist corporation makes a lot of money, and one of the reasons they can make a lot of money, if not the main reason, is because they pay people not that much money and charge a huge amount of money, right? The employees don't make as much money. Why on earth would they break with American tradition of like hundreds of years and put a worker on a board of directors? Why would they do that?
Well, that's why we're running this campaign, because let me back up and give you a little history.
Okay.
In the European Union and Germany and the UK, this process is called co-determination, where a worker working in many different kinds of industries would actually sit on the board of directors, or the board of directors would form a work council, so any decisions that would be made affecting how the workers work in any capacity and, you know, tools and everything like that, it's decided before it's implemented. And see, here's what...
Maybe that's just because they have strong unions over there. They're not doing it for moral reasons, are they? Are they doing it because they have strong unions? Or are they doing it for moral reasons?
Well, I think both, from what I've been able to read up on the subject.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what's the difference with how the Hyatt Corporation is run.
Mm-hmm.
The Hyatt Corporation is run from a top-down style manager, meaning the board of directors and the executives directly under them, the decisions are made at a very top level, and then those decisions are ferreted out to all of the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And Hyatt has stated publicly that they like to give the general manager of each hotel leeway to run the hotel according to what type of city they're in, so on and so forth.
Right.
But I have found out in personal experience, when we go to the general manager here, they're not able to answer a lot of questions. they always refer to you like, well, we'll get back. Mm-hmm. We'll have to check. And the kind of questions that we workers are asking them is about work situations, you know, working conditions.
So this happens in Europe, and I could sort of understand why it would happen or that it would happen. But I have to keep saying that. I mean, it's the name of the of your movement here is Someone Like Us, right?
No, Someone Like Me.
Someone Like Me. In other words, Someone like an employee who cleans the rooms, maybe who does maintenance, people like that.
That's right. So an employee that actually works in a hotel, that does the physical labor, a common sense solution to make the workplace a safer and a better workplace.
Now, let's say you would assume that would be a good idea for them to do that, aside from the fact that a corporation in this country, I can't even imagine them doing. But the reason it's a good idea is that it will lead to better treatment of the employees. And then if the employees are treated better or paid better or have better working conditions, they would do a better job, or they would be more happy in their job? I mean, what is it?
Well, I'm being the devil's advocate.
You know, I mean, what does a corporation care whether you're happy or not?
Well, they should. That's just a point. And also, if someone like me were on the board of directors, we were able to decide together things that affect the working conditions every day, the workers would be much happier. But, you know, the workers already take pride in their work. There's
right.
There's a lot of loyalty to Hyatt, even though they're not always treated fairly.
Mm.
But the workers deserve a voice. And we have such good ideas that would make our job easier and more efficient. So it behooves me to really understand why a board like the Hyatt Corporation wouldn't listen to a worker who has all these common sense solutions to offer. You see, the board, give them credit, they have financial sense. But give us workers credit. We have common sense.
So basically, if you were all doing your job, or you were given the tools to do your job, or treated in a certain way where you did your job more efficiently just because they gave you better working conditions, or maybe paid better, or one of the other things, by the way, that the Someone Like Me movement wants to do is the trend across the country is to like cut full-time work and make it into part-time work so they don't have to pay benefits, right?
Yes, and see, that's one of the things. That's why we're on boycott against Hyatt, because Hyatt Corporation, the hotel chain, groups such as Hilton, Starwood, and other chains look to see what Hyatt is doing to keep the money flowing, to make more money. And subcontracting, whereas a hotel will use a temporary agency and delete their permanent staff, but keep using part-time workers who, of course, aren't directly employed by Hyatt, and they do have little to no benefits and much less pay. There's no protection
and
on the job whatsoever.
And Hyatt can always say then that they didn't know what was going on, and it's not their problem. It's the other people, right? You know,
and that's typically what any employer would say who uses subcontracting work. But you know what? I know that Hyatt knows what's going on. I give them so much credit. They're bringing a bunch of people.
Well, listen,
to be billionaires. I'm a zero-naire.
Wait, you don't have $1 billion, right? That's
no, I sure don't.
Okay, yeah. Well, that makes two of us. So, so here you are. Are you on your way to work now?
Yeah, we're doing a delegation this morning. Because this is a perfect example why they need someone like me on the board. We're doing a delegation this morning to the general manager's office because we have a new general manager, and he has decided to cut much of the restaurant operations, and which would cut out lay off a lot of people, several workers. And this is the start of the tour season, so I don't know what he's thinking.
Well, he probably maybe he received instructions saying, you know, you better save on costs. So
I would tend to believe just what you said, because when I sit down and think about the ways that they run the hotels, it's like, okay, you must be getting orders from above, because what you're telling me to my face, to our faces, is not good common sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good operational sense. So that's what I mean.
Yeah.
By Hyatt needs to listen to the workers, because I talk to the kitchen workers and the servers, and they have offered such better ideas, you know, to do things like change the menu. You know, offer. In other words, they've offered solutions to make the restaurant viable and in good operating standard and the money coming in. But according to them, management has not listened. So that's the whole point of Someone Like Me campaign.
There's a board of directors meeting for Hyatt in June, right?
I will be there.
Where is it going to be?
Well, I'm not sure, because I don't think they announce it until 2 months from. We don't know if it's going to be in Chicago, New York, or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So where can people go? Is there something online? Where can people go to help out with this movement, to try to get somebody like you on the board of directors of Hyatt?
Okay, there's a HyattHurts.org. That's Hyatt, H-Y-A-T-T, Hurts, H-U-R-T-S, one word, HyattHurts.org. Or on Twitter, it's Hyatt Hurts Us.
Okay, okay.
And, you know, if you just tap my name, Kathy Youngblood, into the internet, if you can't remember HyattHurts.org or Hyatt Hurts Us, tap my name in, and you'll eventually come under articles pertaining to working in the hotel industry.
So, one last question: Has anybody at the hotel called you in or spoken to you? I mean, they're aware of what your stance is and what you're doing, right?
Oh, they're very aware of what I'm doing, and because I'm so outspoken, and because I am a dedicated employee, and my work record is very, very clean, very good.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of treat me with arm's length. Like, the less they see me, the less they speak to me, the better it is for them.
Also, if you're pointing all these things out and they come down on you or get rid of you, then it just, you're just proving the point, right?
Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, you never know what Hyatt's going to do. But I'm an old gal that knows how to watch her back. I'll just say that.
Okay. Kathy Youngblood, who is a member of Unite Here, which is, I guess, the union, right? Unite Here?
Yes, that's the union. Local 11 here in Los Angeles.
Is the union associated with any larger union?
Well, we are a member of the AFL-CIO, so, you know, who oversees all the unions, most of the unions in the United States.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. And people should visit this place, Hyatt Hurts, and you find out a lot more about what's going on. Also, take a look.
On Facebook, too.
Oh, on Facebook? Yeah, all right, on Facebook.
Yeah.
And you should all check out, as I mentioned, I was talking about a week or two ago about this Penny Pritzker. She's really some character, you know what I mean? She's the one behind Obama's success.
You know what? And I wish her all the success. But you've got a housekeeper here, and along with other hotel workers, we could help you make Hyatt an even greater, more profitable place to work if you just listen to us.
Well, I don't know if, but Penny, if you're listening, do the right thing. You know. All right. Thank you.
I would love to meet her in person.
Yeah, I'd love to see the two of you meet. I'd like to see a video of that. Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
Okay, thank you.
All right. All right, this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back with some other stuff in just a bit.
Some people have not.
Okay, we're back. This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. So check out our Facebook page, Occupied Territory on Facebook. So let us catch up with things that are going on here. Latest thing is, you're aware, obviously, you all know who Bradley Manning is. And it's been 3 years since he was first arrested. 3 years since he was arrested for revealing classified documents to the tune of something like 240,000 different files that he was able to download because he had access to computers, and he was very good at computers, basically hacked some of this stuff and just plugged into it and downloaded it. One of the things, of course, the most famous one being, which started it all off, this is before he was arrested, they don't know who did this, was tapes taken from attack helicopters in Iraq when they murdered innocent people and were having just a jolly time doing it, like they were playing a video game, American troops. So this is what started out. Then other things were leaked to various sites on the internet. And so they arrested this guy, had decided that he's a traitor and that they would probably shoot him and hang him and cut his head off if they could. But basically what did is he leaked a whole lot of documents. It turned out that even though they were classified, and of course you have to remember that the government now, because, you know, basically the government does not represent you. It is in opposition to you now. If you're a citizen of the United States, that means you're in the opposition. You're not a member of the United States. A citizen of the United States means that you are somebody who lives in a place that's owned and run by other people. And you're actually considered, especially if you open your mouth and say anything or even point out that the emperor has no clothes, you're considered somebody who's a potential criminal, possibly a terrorist. You're certainly somebody they're going to investigate or surveil with God knows what equipment or drones. So Manning released all this stuff. A lot of it was State Department documents, and it was extraordinarily embarrassing because it showed a lot of wheeling and dealing going on, and it showed really, in a lot of ways, our true nature of our relationship with a lot of dictator countries, a lot of backroom bargaining, and a lot of what it was like on the inside of being an imperial kind of empire in the world. And he just leaked all this stuff. I'm sure his reasons were mixed, but one reason that he stated publicly over and over again is he felt like it was just wrong. And he was in Iraq. He was a soldier in Iraq. And his job over there initially was to, being a computer expert and being good at video and everything else, to provide real-time information for soldiers who then went in and went into combat situations. But what turned out was he was getting pretty upset as time went on in his tour of combat duty over there, because he was providing information for people who were just basically going in and shooting people, very often who were not armed or who had no chance whatsoever, and he got sick to death of it. And he couldn't think of any good reason, like most sensible people, why we were there in the first place. So he did this. Anyhow, you know about Bradley Manning. So they arrested him, and now it's been over 1,000 days that he's been in jail. I say 3 years, but it's been over 1,000 days that he's been in jail. Check this out. He's got a hearing. He has numerous hearings. They have the evidentiary hearings, what can be admitted, what witnesses can be allowed to speak, you know, a million things, right, like a big complex trial. And this is from a place called Common Dreams. By the way, I've mentioned Alternet before as a place to go, alternet.net or alternet.org, as a place to go for keeping updated every single day on all kinds of important stories from a decent, intelligent point of view, with facts provided. But one site that's just as good as Alternet, or sometimes I would say even better, is a place called Common Dreams. Anybody listening to me now, visit a place called commondreams.org. Commondreams.org. They are raising money like a lot of these places are, because while most businesses and companies are making tons of money these days, they're thriving under Mr. Obama, large corporations and rich people. Places that report the truth about things, that is to say, not the 95% of the media, MSNBC, or as my friend Greg calls it, MSDNBC, for the D for Democratic Party. You're not going to get any of this information anywhere else. So places, there are certain sites on the internet and certain radio stations like PRN where you need to go if you really want to find out what's going on. True story. Common Dreams. Go to Common Dreams. They're raising money there. If you have any money to give them, $10, $20, give this place money. They are a wonderful group of people. They have their own staff there. They reprint articles by really well-known people and other people who are, like, you know, doing the work out in the field, activists, people, lawyers, journalists. I mean, it's a great website, Common Dreams. And this is from Common Dreams. It says here, this is from 2 days ago, Manning's right to a speedy trial not violated after 1,000 days, judge rules. It's a military court, so it's a court-martial. And the pretrial hearings, which have been going on for a couple of years, are moving to a full court-martial. That'll be the regular trial this June. Bradley Manning has not had his rights violated while waiting in a cell for almost 3 years before being granted a trial, Judge Colonel Denise Lind ruled in a pretrial hearing Tuesday. Let's see. Manning's lawyer, David Coombs, had argued that the prosecution was guilty of extreme foot dragging and shameful lack of diligence, which violated Manning's right to a speedy trial, which is, you know, guaranteed in the foundation of American law, the right to a speedy trial, right? I mean, if you got arrested in New York State or in Iowa or wherever you are listening to this, and they held you in jail for close to 3 years without bringing you to trial, they would have to release you. Ultimately, it wouldn't even matter what you did, right? Even if you tried to knock Dick Cheney's artificial heart out of his body, you would have to be released because they violated your basic constitutional right. You can't just throw people in jail. That's what they do in dictatorships. Anyhow, Bradley Manning, let's see. A soldier in the military, and this is according to the military rules, has had his or her speedy trial rights violated when it takes over 120 days before an arraignment, which is the case for Manning. You know, he qualifies because he's a member of the military. However, the judge, Denise Lind, the colonel, ruled in favor of the prosecution, who said that some of these of those days in jail, or those 1,000 days, didn't actually count in the speedy trial rule due to, only lawyers can come up with this, right, excludable delays initiated by the prosecution because they brought up all kinds of quibbling little minor points, and because they made so many they put up so many roadblocks to a fair trial because they went to so much trouble to stall and to what they wanted to do all the time that this kid was in jail. First, they were torturing him, but then they let up on that when it became too public and the president was getting even a little embarrassed. Otherwise, he would have let it go on. They wanted him to rat on Julian Assange. That was the whole point. Because Julian Assange and his group were the ones who leaked all this stuff, as you remember, to the whole, you know, to the media and the rest of the world. And the United States wants to get their hands on this guy more than Bradley Manning. They would like to string him up and burn him at the top of the Washington Monument, you know, for revealing the secrets of the United States. So Manning, they were using as a lever, right? So they made his life miserable, and they kept him in jail, and they're still keeping him in jail, you know. Now, one of the reasons they dragged their feet is that they wanted him to break down, and they want him to confess, yes, I gave this all to Julian Assange. So one sooner or later, they'll have a, you know, that'll be enough of a reason, I suppose, under the new laws that Mr. Obama created for himself and Mr. Brennan. Maybe if they get enough information from Bradley Manning, they can classify Julian Assange as a terrorist and blow him up on his way to court in Sweden. You know, that's probably what they want to do. But Saturday, let's see, marked the 1,000th day that Manning has been in military custody without trial. Protesters gathered in 70 different locations around the world in solidarity with Manning. The judge, Colonel Denise Lind, this is ironic, right, spent 2 hours reading out her judgment. Well, he's already been in, you know, in jail for, you know, like 1,000 days. Spent 2 hours reading out her judgment at a pretrial hearing in Fort Meade, Maryland. She went through the procedures in preparing for trial in minute detail, concluding that the exceptional length of the case was almost entirely justified as a result of its uniquely complex and sensitive nature. Under the rules of court-martial 707, any member of the military who is prosecuted must be brought to trial as measured by the date of his or her arraignment, and this was a long time ago for Manning, within a speedy trial clock of 120 days after being detained. But there are grounds for excusable delays that set back the clock that include the need for counsel to prepare for a trial and a complex case that includes both sides, prosecutor and defense, and inquiry into the mental condition of the accused, which was done 2 years ago already. and the time taken to obtain security clearance for classified information, which, of course, they had, you know, at their fingertips the minute he was arrested anyhow. So it's all bullshit. In other words, they've kept this kid languishing in jail. Why? He's the least of it. It's an example to all of us. To us, we call ourselves citizens. They call us suckers or voters. I don't know what they call us these days. But this is a lesson. The way he's being treated is a lesson to everybody who works in the government, everybody in the military, and, in fact, every American citizen. Mind your own business. Shut up. Don't tell anybody anything you see that the government is doing wrong. Even if you don't work for the government, they would like you to shut up. And that's why they're going after this guy and have left him in jail for 1,000 days. If I was a member of a court, even of a military court, and I had any say over this, I would release him instantly and say that his basic constitutional rights have been violated. You know, yeah, you want to put him in under house arrest or something like that, but get him out of jail. I mean, he's already been punished, right, for what he did. And there's a lot of people, including me, who don't think what he did deserves any more than a slap on the wrist. Because what he did was, and this is, you know, maybe promoting decency and morality above standard legal practice. What is justice anyhow? Justice is a very complicated thing. But one thing justice is, it's what's right and wrong. So what this kid did is he got disgusted by his participation in what he considered to be just plain murder in Iraq. And then he had access to all these documents. He downloaded them and transferred them to Julian Assange, and that was the end of that. They were leaked all over the world, something like 250,000 documents, some of which included members, names of people. You know, there's extremes in every case. Some of these documents that were leaked included the names of covert American operatives in different places. But no one, you can imagine that the government has assigned absolutely everybody, you know, up to the point of actually lying about it. They've assigned every agent to investigate every possibility that somebody got hurt so they could blame him for murder, you know, Bradley Manning, because somebody was outed, you know, in the government service. So far, nobody has been able to prove in the United States government, and they probably spent 10,000 hours on doing this, that any document that he leaked has compromised the physical safety of any single person in the American government. So nobody has died, you know, no covert operative. Nobody has died as a result of what he did. The worst thing that happened was that the rest, according to the way the government sees it, is the rest of the world saw how an imperial power wheels and deals and saw the vile behavior of what goes on in the back rooms of these government departments. And that's the worst thing that happened. To, I think, a lot of other people like me, it's not such a bad thing that we have more openness. The government has now, under Obama, it took a quantum leap from Bush. I mean, gigantic leap from Bush. Every single thing is classified as is labeled classified. Every document that the government, I mean, if they issue a permit to a national park, it's a classified document. You can't show it to anybody. If there is toilet paper, you know, in the Pentagon and you're visiting one day just to take a tour and you use it, that's class. Everything is classified so that you have no ability to look at it, to see it, to review it. I mean, this is a government. They're locking this kid up for almost 3 years now, and they still haven't even brought him to trial, which is outrageous, of course. It has nothing to do with the American justice system at all. But here is a government that will not even give information that the CIA uses and that the Pentagon uses to murder people overseas with our tax money. They won't give them so much as the time of day. A congressional committee asks for these things. Our representatives in Congress, senators elected by us as citizens, demand this information from the executive, from the CIA, from the Pentagon, and they're told to go screw themselves. Forget about it. You can't have it. They can't have it. In other words, nobody is allowed to see what we're doing because we're going to do whatever we want. We violate everything in the Constitution, every law there is, every law of humanity, and there's no way, and it's okay because we say it's okay. And furthermore, you don't get to see any memos, any rules, or any laws that we have that we created ourselves that say that we're allowed to go and do these things. Now, specifically, I'm talking about drones. Brennan's confirmation hearing is coming up. They just, let's see, it was just yesterday, I think, they confirmed this sleazy Wall Street reptile, Jacob Lew, L-E-W, as Secretary of the Treasury. And why not? Why not certify Jacob Lew as Secretary of the Treasury? Here's Jacob Lew. Jacob Lew has worked in the government for something like 30 years. He was President Obama's chief of staff once upon a time. He was in the Office of Management and Budget for some other, maybe for Clinton. Now, here's Jacob Lew. Jacob, and a lot of the senators, especially Democratic senators, got upset with Mr. Lew. And now, why would they do that, after all, you know? And here's Mr. Jacob Lew. Jacob Lew worked in the government for a long, long time. In 2006, he decided to cash in like everybody else in the revolving door from government to business and became, let's see, the head of an executive department at Citigroup, right? Mr. Lew began his relatively brief immersion on Wall Street when he joined Citigroup in 2006 as chief operating officer of the bank's global wealth management unit. Now, you know, you all voted against Romney, right? You voted against Romney. A lot of you voted against Romney. And you voted for the lesser of two evils, Mr. Obama, right? You don't want to vote for Romney because, after all, here's a guy who represented the worst of America. Greed, hedge funds, contempt for the lower classes and for all the rest of us, for every class except for the rich, right? Utter contempt, arrogance, greed, only interested in wealth. He didn't care how he made his money. Thousands of people lost their jobs. People went broke, and he made $250 million, Romney, doing absolutely nothing except manipulating companies and ruining people's lives. All right. So, but you voted against him, right? And that was the right thing. That you voted for Mr. Obama because he's the lesser of two evils. Here's who he appoints to the Treasury Secretary, Mr. Obama. Mr. Lew, Jacob Lew, began his relatively brief immersion on Wall Street when he joined Citigroup in 2006. As chief operating officer of the bank's global wealth management unit, right? The Treasury the executive of the United States, do I need to remind everybody, is supposed to, his main job is, you know, aside from protecting the country from foreign enemies, you know, from enemies, his main job is to look out for the welfare, the common welfare of the citizens of the United States, not for, you know, not to provide for the welfare and to watch out for the top 0.1% or the top 1% of the population because they're rich and they help him get elected, like Penny Pritzker. No, he's supposed to, it says it in the Constitution, his job, his basic job is to provide for the welfare of the people of the United States, all right, and to facilitate that. So who does he appoint for the Treasury Secretary, right? But somebody who is working at Citibank, one of the worst, one of the banks, one of the two or three biggest banks that destroyed the whole world's economy and wrecked people's lives, put millions of people out of jobs and threw hundreds of thousands of people at this point out of their houses. Goes to work for this place. This is when Obama had already been elected, so he'd already been working for the government. Global Wealth Management. But God forbid we should have voted for Romney. He would have done something really bad, right? But the role he took on in January of 2008 as chief operating officer for the bank's alternative investment unit stirred the most congressional ire. Now, what is that? Containing some of the most volatile investments of the bank, the unit plowed money into hedge funds and private equity investments. These investments helped to catalyze Citigroup's huge losses in the depths of a financial crisis, actually caused it, forcing the bank to take billions of dollars in taxpayer money, hundreds of billions of dollars. So this guy's in charge of the unit that was, and they deliberate, and they knew this too. I'm sure nobody's got the goods on this guy. They probably destroyed the memos that implicate him, and probably the people who were, you know, who were working in the photo department, in a photocopy department. You know, this guy is in charge of the very division which shouldn't even exist at all in a bank like Citigroup, right? That helped to destroy the economy with these collateralized debt obligations and mortgage derivatives, and he was in charge of it, right? At one point, in response to questions about the unit's investments, I mean, he was in charge of the worst place in Citigroup, Mr. Lew told lawmakers when they were grilling him the other day that he was more of a logistics man, overseeing the budget operations rather than hashing out investment decisions, right? I was just taking orders. My job was just to get the trains to run on time. I didn't know that they were going to the concentration camps. They didn't tell me. And I did a good job. I got the trains running on time. This is exactly what he did, right? So let's see. Rather than hashing out investment decisions, Mr. Liu has struck this neutral tone, that's polite, of course, before. In 2010 confirmation hearings for budget director, which he was before, Mr. Liu described himself as a manager, not as an investment advisor. So here's a guy in charge of this gigantic division, first wealth management, and then the worst of them all, this mortgage derivative and collateralized debt obligation unit that screwed the whole economy, right, that fueled this tremendous crash. By the way, and if you remember correctly, Citigroup, the people, probably he knew too, but you'll never find out, they knew at the very top that this thing was going to crash, and they bet against their own customers and made some money that way, which is complicated, but I could explain that sometimes. So meanwhile, he's claiming he didn't know anything about it. He didn't know a damn thing about it, you know? He was shocked to discover that gambling was going on in the back room. At one point, though, Senator Orrin Hatch questioned whether Mr. Liu saw emails about the sort of souring complex investments that brought the Citigroup to a near collapse. Also at issue, yeah, I wonder, did he, you think? Also at issue for Senator Hatch was whether Mr. Liu knew that the unit had bet against some of the financial products it assembled. Here's the question. Did you not know about the marketing of the sales products in the unit you managed? In which case, I wonder, what did you do? And Mr. Liu has maintained that he was not involved in these decisions. He said, yes, I was aware that there were funds that were in trouble, he testified. I didn't have responsibility for the funds themselves, but I was aware that those difficulties were going on. So he knew, this son of a bitch, this greedy rich man's dog, knew that his group, more than any other group in the whole world, was screwing millions of people, and that millions of people would be, who knows what would happen to the economy, but hundreds of thousands of investors and millions of people would wind up probably in dire jeopardy if this bank went under. He also knew that the government would bail it out. Who's the government? That's you and me. You and me, we're the government when they need our money. They take our tax money to bail out these criminal banks and people like Mr. Liu, who should be in jail, not being the secretary, right? And but when they want to kill people with drones, or when they want to spy on everybody in the world, and when they want to spend money that you're not allowed to know about, you're not part of the government. But you're definitely part of the government when they need your money to bail out criminals like Jacob Liu. So that's who Mr. Obama appoints as the treasurer of the secretary. Here's his pick for the Department of Energy, for Energy Secretary, right? The head of the Department of Energy is Professor Ernest Moniz of MIT, and he is the head of a group that did a study at MIT and found out that fracking is pretty good. Hydraulic fracturing is not a big problem. Don't worry about it. And based on his report at MIT, the president and other people are using that as an excuse to be a bully on the subject of fracking. This guy, who is probably, if he gets to be the head of the Department of Energy, it's forget about it, right? This is the guy he's picking to be the head of the Department of Energy. But the best one is Mary Jo White, who he wants to appoint as the head of the SEC. The SEC is supposed to make sure that securities and exchange trading in bonds and stocks and the way banks and stocks and bonds and markets interact with each other is fair, and that common information is provided to the investor so they can be secure in their investments. My God, right? Let's see. This is from the SEC website. They're supposed to be responsible to it's provide facts for investment for investors prior to buying investments, and so long as they hold on to their investments. To achieve this, the SEC receives a public requires public companies to disclose meaningful. In other words, she's supposed to patrol the global markets and the stock exchange and bond and stock trading. Who is she? She was until recently, and she quit the other day. Well, she's going to quit. She says she still is. The head litigator making a couple of million dollars a year at the largest corporate law firm in the United States. And her main clients were J.P. Morgan and you name it. Her main clients were the very people, the investment banks, that destroyed the economy. These were the people she was defending, and God knows what kind of advice she was giving to them up until, God, maybe a month ago. He appoints a woman who has a wealth of something like $35 million a year. Her husband is in another law firm, also provides advice and consultation to these banks. He is appointing everybody to all these places. Brennan, Secretary of the Treasury, Energy, head of the SEC, who are the worst people in the world. These are people who are bound to continue the oppression of all of us. So this is your lesser of two evils, this son of a bitch. All right, I'll be back next week.